Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Welcome to the Vaporsmith's Freedom Hour with Freedom Fiends, Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vedati.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Rolling. Hey, Freedom Fiends, how you doing? It's Nima Vedati over here.
And this is Michael W. Dean, also known as Michael Dub, apparently.
M-Dub. M-Dub Dean.
Speaking of apparently, well, that's what it says on the Freedom Fiends calendar for my birthday, is that it's apparently this day. We're having a contest for our upcoming 1 year of Freedom Fiends. Woo woo!
Yeah!
And the first prize is a Freedom Fiends calendar for this year, which only four of them exist. You know, you got one, I got one, Lou has one, and you, the listener, could have one.
Six actually exist. I sent two to my little brother and my mom, too.
Ah, you just diluted the power of the gold.
I did, unfortunately. But it's okay. You'll get the magical seventh one if you win this contest.
There you go. But also you told the truth of how many are out there, unlike the Fed.
Right. Which is hidden by shadowy stuff and zeros and ones and banks that we don't even know about.
Yeah. So and the second prize is a bunch of data CDs of Freedom Fiends MP3s to give away to friends and a burned copy of the Guns and Weed movie.
Oh, yeah. So that when the government shuts down the internet, you'll still be able to listen to us.
And here's what you have to do to enter. You go to iTunes and review us. I'm sorry, rate and review us on iTunes Store. Then post about it. Tell us what username you used somewhere.
So are we going to draw from how many people? Are we going to take everybody that rates and reviews us and enter them into like a hat and have DJ draw out names?
Although we might have a little weight this time on how charmingly written the reviews are. We didn't last time.
I don't know if we should do that. That seems a little bit unfair. Because I think even if you write a bad review or give us a bad rating, you should still enter the contest. I don't want all our reviews to be glowing just because we bribed people into doing it.
Yeah, we're not buying reviews. Although, if you hated the Freedom Fiends podcast, I can't really see why you'd want a Freedom Fiends calendar. So I think the free market will take care of that.
Exactly. Voluntary human action will take care of that.
Yeah. Speaking of non-voluntary human action, a whole bunch of tyrannical things have happened this week, but do you have anything before we get into it?
No, let's get into it, man, because I've been feeling pretty oppressed lately. Like, normally I'm really in high spirits and optimistic, and I'm like, yeah, liberty's gonna win, but I don't know. I feel like I have more libertarian juices to stew in lately, so we can get into it unless you have something to as a pregame.
Well, here's a pregame, just kind of funny, cute little thing. Is I didn't know this. Ron Paul's middle name is Ernest. Did you know that?
I only knew it because you put it in the notes.
Well, it's kind of funny because my dad's middle name is Ernest also, and it's not a very common name anymore. It's an old guy name, middle name.
Right. It also means honest or sincere.
Yeah.
So it's very fitting. I think I didn't put it in these notes, but in the notes when you put it in a long time ago, I wrote, I would have also accepted Frank as Ron Paul's middle name.
Yeah. And although Frank doesn't really have any moral attachment to it, it just means, you know, you could be a scumbag and be Frank. It just means you tell it like it is.
That's true.
And Ernest also has a secondary meaning that's sort of somber or sober, which would fit my dad. Not somber, but he's very, I don't know, square. Ernest can mean square, and it fits both my dad and Ron Paul in a good way.
In a good way.
They say Ron Paul is the squarest guy in the world, and he wants to fight for your right to not be square.
That's why he doesn't fit our definition of square, which our definition of square is statist, and Ron Paul's by no means statist.
And now, the Nima News with Nima Vidati.
And now for your daily dose of nanny statism in our daily segment, Tyranny Today.
Tyranny Today.
Someone wants to make you square. Like the new, do you hear about the law in Ohio? The governor is pushing a law to make it illegal to have a secret compartment in your car, regardless of whether there's anything illegal in it.
Ooh, I read a ton of tyranny over the past couple weeks, but I didn't read that one. You can't have a stash spot. That's what they call it in Houston rap, a stash right. spot. You can't have a stash spot anymore.
You know, even people who don't break the law would have a reason to have one of those. If you keep valuables in your car, if you're a traveling salesman and you want a place to put your phone in your gun or your phone in your wallet, you know?
Yeah. Well, plus cars get broken into so often that if you ever are traveling or just have anything in your car, you should be able to have a space to stash that stuff. I mean, whether it be an iPod or a sack of weed, I don't see how it's any of the government's business what you have in your car as far as storing stuff.
And this governor thinks he's above the law. There's a famous video on YouTube of him being pulled over by Ohio State Police and getting a ticket for doing something that is illegal and rude and dangerous, which is not pulling over when there's a cop on the side, you know, giving someone else a ticket or something. You know, in most states, it's the law that you have to go over to the other lane for the safety of the officer and the person pulled over. And this governor, like, sped at high speed past the cop, felt the wind on his head kind of thing, and then chased him down, gave him a ticket, and then in a press release the next day or the next week, this governor was like, well, the police want higher pay, but you know, I've met some police who are real idiots. Let me tell you about this idiot that pulled me over the other day. Like, basically, this cop who didn't recognize that I'm better than everyone else and gave me a ticket for doing something illegal and dangerous, you know?
Yeah.
He thinks he's above the law, but he wants to make it illegal for you to have a stash box. Or the law is so vaguely written that if you had, like, specialty speakers put in your car and there was a space behind them, a cop could get you for that if you wanted.
Right. And it could be a hidden compartment you don't even know about. Like, you could have just got the car and not checked it out completely and the cops go through it. Which is why, you know, rule one is you never let a cop search your car.
Or what about contractors that have, like, toolboxes welded into their car?
It's a good point. And that's, when the law's written as vaguely as that law probably is, and most laws are, then, you know, I could see a cop saying, you know, some of those center console things, you know, they have two sections. They've got the one you lift up, and then the lift up part actually has a second thing that opens. They could even say that is a hidden compartment.
Yeah, and I read some of the comments on a newspaper article about this, and it was like, you know, it's getting to the point where, like, half the people commenting on anything are like, the government's gone too far, and they're not even people that smoke weed. They're just like, this is ridiculous. And then the other half were people saying, like, you guys are all idiots, you know, using the same term as the governor used. You guys are all idiots. They're only going to use this to go after drug dealers. They're not going to use this to go after people who have tools in their car. I'm thinking, you naive son of a bitch. You know, if you're a guy without weed in your car and you're a contractor and a cop pulls you over and you're just rude to him, he's going to get you on a felony or something if he can.
Right. Yeah. It just gives another weapon, so to speak, to anybody who wants to throw you in a cage or make you pay them a couple hundred bucks just because you didn't follow some law you didn't know about.
Of course, good law-abiding people would never be rude to a cop unless they're the governor.
Unless they're the governor, who's obviously not a good person, and I doubt he's very law-abiding.
I mean, he brought this up in, like, union contract negotiation with the cops. Like, you guys want more money? Well, some of you are idiots. One of you pulled me over yesterday and did his job, basically, is what he was saying.
Well, you know, he's probably right about most of them being idiots. And he's right to be upset about cops, and I'm glad that maybe he's not going to give him a raise, but it's for the wrong reason.
But if you're someone who helps write the laws, you better play by the laws, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, you're a hypocrite.
If you're someone who helps push forth more crap, and as laws go, you know, I think in LibPair, there'd be no problem with having weed in a secret compartment in your car, for that matter. But I think that on the private road, the officers of safety who are responsible for keeping that road safe on the private road you voluntarily use. I think if you blew past them at 90 miles an hour and shook the car and endangered them, I think they'd chase you down and say something to you.
Yeah, I think they would. I mean, it's valid. I learned this lesson the hard way when I was 18. I was driving in Houston, actually near Deer Park, where all the oil refineries are. And I sped past a cop and he chased me down, same exact scenario. And I didn't know at the time, I was 18. I didn't know there was some law that said I had to get in the other lane or slow down. And the cop was a real dick about it. I mean, I could see his point, but he tried to ask me if I had any explosives in the car.
There's a ton of dash cam videos too on YouTube of like cops giving someone a ticket and then, you know, a semi wiping out the car and everyone jumping out of the way.
Right.
It's not uncommon, but go on. He thought you had explosives?
Thought I had explosives. And, you know, I was wearing my wife beater so you could see my tattoo on my left arm, which is my name written in, you know, Persian. So it looks all squiggly, as they would say in Arrested Development. And he, I guess, didn't take too kindly to it and kept harassing me, thinking I had some kind of terrorist paraphernalia in my car. So he asked if he could search. It wasn't too far after 9/11. So it was 2002, maybe even late 2001. It was right after 9/11, and so he was kind of on guard. And he asked if he could search the car, and I said no. And he got so angry. He was like, well, why can't I search your car? And I was like, well, you don't have probable cause. There's no reason I would want you to search my car. Plus, I told him I had that happen once where a cop searched my car a couple years ago, and it was very embarrassing. I had my girlfriend with me. I was on a date, and it was cold outside, and the cop took an hour, and he didn't find anything, and it was just a big mess. And it's 2 a.m. I want to go home and go to sleep, so please just let me move on. And he harassed me a little bit more, but eventually he let me go. You know, he wrote me a ticket that I had to pay, which is, you know, stupid, but
cops are getting so pissed that people are starting to know the law a little bit that I think they're going to redefine it like they did this week with when they killed Alalaki, the American citizen, without a trial. What they do? They droned him, right?
They droned him. Yeah. And killed some other people. And then they went back a week later and droned his teenage son, who was just looking for his dad. It was his son's like life mission to find his dad and bring him back to the States. And they droned him at a backyard barbecue. So yeah, that whole situation was pretty bad.
And killed other people at the backyard barbecue, too.
Yeah.
You and I were going on and on and railing about, tell us your justification for this, Department of Justice. And they wouldn't. They said, well, we've written it up, but it's secret. They actually released it this week. Did you know that?
No, I heard that Eric Holder gave a conference about it and was explaining it, but I didn't read the release.
Well, did you hear his explanation?
To the effect of his explanation was, you know, this is just something we have the power to do.
Well, he said due process, which Americans are constitutionally entitled to. He's decided due process does not necessarily mean judicial process.
Which to me, I could see that being legally in a statist way justifiable. I mean, due process is so vague. I mean, all it means is you have to have some type of process that you feel is due, that the powers that be feel is due. So really, that could be any process.
You know what I think the man wants to do to us? I think they realize that it wouldn't really work to just scrap the Constitution. So they're just going to redefine everything in the Constitution, you know, to the point where like,
of course
you have the right to keep and bear arms, but you can't buy bullets and we have to be able to come in your house and examine your guns.
Yeah. Or they'll redefine what arms is. They'll say it's those things that are attached to your shoulders.
Yes.
Yeah, they can play with language and mutilate it, you know, and that's really where the tyranny becomes justifiable, not only in their heads, but in the heads of those that aren't paying attention or those that are a little bit too trusting. I mean, that's half of what 1984 was about, was the way they mutilated the language to prevent people from thinking critically and also to make sure people were, you know, in love with the state. And it seems like that's what they've been attempting for a long, long time. And unfortunately, they've had more success than I wish they would have had.
Well, speaking of success, you know, Houston got a drone. Houston SWAT team got a drone. And what happened?
Well, I actually think it was Montgomery County, which I think is a bit north East, maybe? I don't know. It's been a long time since I lived in Houston. But they wanted the drone to take pictures of this SWAT raid they were doing. You know, they love to put on their exciting gear.
They just want to be able to masturbate to the pictures later.
They just want to look cool and put them on Facebook or whatever the hell they
and
do.
And put heavy
there.
Metal music behind them.
They want to feel like they're in an action movie.
Yeah.
But it turned into the blooper reel because the drone apparently lost communication with the controller and it crashed into the SWAT tank.
Yeah, their Bearcat SWAT tank. So they got a drone and a tank and they crashed their drone into the tank. What is that line? Somebody's, I forget who said it, but it's something about like governments with money are like handing car keys and whiskey to teenage boys.
Yeah, I never heard that line, but that makes sense. Peter Schiff says something like that when he says, you know, the Fed is the kindergarten teacher who gave everybody a bunch of soda and then got upset when they started, you know, getting hyper and tearing the classroom apart.
So, yeah, we're coming up on a year of the Freedom Fiends, man.
Oh, yeah. Has it?
We haven't been droned yet.
Have not been droned. We are lucky.
In war, they say every day above ground is a good day. The fiends say every day we're not droned is a good day, which I guess would be above ground. But I think if you were droned, so many parts of you would be scattered that they'd never find them all to be able to put them underground.
Yeah, it'd be a horrible situation. So when exactly is our 1 year anniversary?
March 30th.
March 30th. So this is the end of March when we first decided, and even then it wasn't called Freedom Fiends, it was called the Guns and Weed Podcast.
Yeah, which finally, happily, got deleted from iTunes Store. For a while, there were two listings there. There was Freedom Fiends and Guns and Weed, and both came up if you searched Freedom Fiends or Your Name or My Name. And it was confusing, because the other one hadn't updated in about 11 months or 10 months. So they finally got rid of that. Thank you, iTunes Store.
Yeah, so go, go, Freedom Fiends.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Fiends, helping the helpless. Freedom Fiends, saving the universe. Freedom Fiends, doing the things that I've
taken the world from the state, fighting the forces of hate.
Freedom Fiends, helping the helpless. Freedom Fiends, kicking the hornet's nest. Freedom Fiends, doing the things that I've done.
Keeping the tasers away, you should be free, not a slave. You'll hear the truth today. Yeah, we will not force you to stop in the cops on the block. For the fiends on the block, ain't never gonna stop in the glass go blow.
So what else you got, man?
What else I got? I think we should talk about what's been going on in the Republican primary a little bit. What do you think?
Okay.
I mean, yeah, I feel the same way, but I feel like I want to get my ugh out there.
Do any of us think we'd have any dreams where, like, we'd wake up today and Ron Paul would be the nominee? Come on.
No, I don't think we did, but I don't know. I guess there was a little hope that the American populace wouldn't be quite so brainwashed. And I always said that, you know, it wasn't necessarily that I wanted Ron Paul or I expected him to win. I just expected more people to like him, more people to understand liberty. And I did not expect Rick Santorum to be as successful as he is.
It's the world we live in. It's not even just America. I mean, I'm reminded of a joke in this show, Peep Show, which you really got to check out. Have you checked out Peep Show?
No, I have not.
BBC comedy that's funny as hell. And there's a scene where these two hipster characters are thinking of starting a bar. And one of them wants to have a really crazy alternative bar. And the other one wants a really normal bar. The other guy's like, that's not what people want. People want foam with logos in their beer and a nice atmosphere. And he's like, we don't have to go by what people like. People like Coldplay and voting for the Nazis.
People like voting for the Nazis.
People did vote for the Nazis in Germany.
Yeah.
And there was actually, you know, like there was a Nazi party in England. I forget. I think it was called the National Front or the something, 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 three letters that got 6% of the vote at one point in the last 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know. And I get that. I feel like I thought maybe the freedom movement was farther along than it is. And really, in a way, it isn't as dire as I feel like it is right now. I'm feeling a bit pessimistic. But Ron Paul has been carrying the youth vote. You know, everybody under 30, he carries.
I mean, he's getting like 10 or 15% of the vote. And that means how many million people, you know, how many million Republicans are voting?
Well, that's the thing about caucuses is caucus turnouts are a lot smaller. I mean, it's not like a general election. It's kind of confusing in some states.
What percentage is he getting, like, in polls?
It hovers around between 10 and 20%, depending on where it's at.
Well, 10 to 20% of the country wants freedom, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Some government-imposed freedom.
Right. The other thing is, I think the whole charade does reinforce the thought that political means is not the way we're going to attain freedom, because there has been a lot of shenanigans going on with the Ron Paul vote. So I think even if Ron Paul was getting 30 or 40%, I'm not sure if we would have known about it.
I think if Ron Paul got 90% of the votes, the GOP would still find a reason not to run him.
They would. They would. Well, and there's been all sorts of local shenanigans going on. Here where I'm at, just south of the river in Benton County, they turned away about 1,000 people from the voting caucuses that day because they said they didn't have enough volunteers to take the votes. So about halfway through the day, in the station I used to work at sent, I think, the reporter who replaced me to go and cover it. And I actually looked at the story. And about halfway through the day, they just said, well, unfortunately, we do not have enough volunteers. So we're going to have to, if you haven't been able to vote yet, you're not going to. So please go home.
They could have pulled 20 volunteers out of that 1,000.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They could have done a lot of different things.
They don't vet them very hard. They could have vetted them on the spot.
Yep, yep. And so what they did was the Republican county officials here, then they let it pass, they let it slide, and then, you know, a few days later, they issued an apology. Just like in Iowa where, you know, it was shenanigans and then they issued an apology. Just like in Maine where they didn't count a few counties or a few precincts and then they issued an apology. You know, that's all they have to do is they screw them over on the actual night. And then they never go back and fix it. They just apologize. Oh, hey, baby, we're sorry. It won't happen again. Never mind the fact that, you know, it screwed everything up. So back to the Lenin thing, that it doesn't so much matter who votes, but who counts the votes.
Yeah.
So that was my depressing. That's what's been making me depressed over the past week.
Well, we got a listener email from Miles who said, so far I've been left with little but a feeling of overwhelming dread about the future. And my recommendation was listen to Stefan Molyneux and Bad Quaker every day. They both make you feel better about things. And they're both realistic.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. And he was saying, you know, basically he wonders if it's even worth it to be awake to the truth. And, you know, maybe this is sort of what makes me happier, is I do feel like it's completely worth it to be awake and to be seeking the truth, because even more fearful of knowing the truth, even if I find out the truth is that people really don't want freedom, the worst fear for me is me being ignorant, especially ignorance that could lead to my death. You know, I don't want to be told a lie about how well taken care of I am, how great the system is, how proud people are of me for following the rules, and then get vaporized when I think I'm finally being sent home, you know, like in Moon.
Yeah, I mean, the only things that could really happen are like, the feds could go, okay, we're going to go contact the Freedom Fiends. We're going to go talk to them. Talking to me, you wouldn't get any more information than you'd get from listening to the Fiends. In fact, you'd get less because I'd have a lawyer there.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be like I'd be withholding anything. It's just I bug my own house. That's what this microphone's for. And, you know, I mean, actually, somebody from the Wyoming Libertarian Party, one of the head people in it, I just found out in December 2001, right after 9/11, he was contacted by the feds for a letter he wrote to the Casper Star Tribune, to the Prairie Pravda.
Ooh.
And I went back and found the letter, and it wasn't incendiary at all. It was just nutty and didn't make a lot of sense. And he'd written it actually like 6 months earlier, but after 9/11, they went and contacted him. And he'd used the word collectivist in it to describe the state. And they contacted him only because he'd used that word, and somebody who'd bombed somebody had used that word in a communication. And it was funny, too, because it was the Colorado FBI, but they didn't bother coming up to see him. They had a friend who's an IRS agent in Casper go talk to him.
It wasn't worth their time to drive through the prairie.
To drive 4 hours through the prairie. I know. And, you know, he's still running the Libertarian Party. It didn't stop him. Although he did say in an interview, like, I'm not going to write letters to the Casper Star Tribune anymore. I've come to a conclusion of on my own before I read this. I've actually had a couple letters published in the Tribune. One was about spice, and the other was telling the Democratic governor he should run as a Republican. It was a joke, but...
But they published it anyway.
But they published it anyway.
Yeah, I don't really take much stock in writing opinion letters to local newspapers. I mean, they're just so square in essence, and the readers are square. I think our forum here on the Freedom Fiends is much better for that. And yep. I think that the future is not your 60-year-old men who are voting in these caucuses and reading the Casper Star Tribune. They're not the future. You know, they're going to ruin things for another couple decades. But I think after that, I think the future is ours, in essence. And maybe I'm wrong because, you know, most of the people I talk to are my age and feel the same way I do. But I feel very hopeful that there's very few young people out there that think it's a good idea to bomb everybody around the world, that think it's a good idea to have our money stolen, and that there's very few people that think it's a good idea to have the government control the whole economy.
And now, some corporate whoring for one of our favorite products.
Hi, I'm Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends podcast, and I'm excited about Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes. I dig the taste, and I dig the freedom to vape anywhere the nanny staters would wet their pants if I smoked.
Howdy, I'm Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends, and I love Vaporsmiths. I smoked 3 packs of tobacco cigarettes a day for decades, but now I'm only using Vaporsmiths. I love the flavors, I don't smell like smoke, and I save money, so I have more to spend on ammo and treats for my kiddies.
Vaporsmith's e-cigs revolutionize nicotine ingestion by bringing it into the 21st century. With Vaporsmith's, you'll enjoy all the invigorating nicotine with none of the nasty smoke. Vaporsmith's are clean, efficient, and tasty. Available in 4 strengths and 10 delicious flavors. Reds, classics, Turkish, menthol, strawberry, cherry, vanilla, coffee, minty mint, and cloves. Go to Vaporsmiths.com. Use coupon code FREEDOMFIEND to get 25% off your order. This is a limited time offer. Vaporsmiths.com is run by a liberty-loving entrepreneur, not some subsidized tax-eater conglomerate. Vaporsmiths at Vaporsmiths.com. Vaporsmiths. I'm enjoying one right now.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
6 drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies! Jesus. On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, the road to freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Yeah, I mean, I read this thing about, you were talking about like the mainstream press and when will they fizzle out. I was watching this documentary on, I think it was CNN or something, about WikiLeaks. And it was actually kind of favorable, or at least it wasn't saying he should be burned at the stake,
right?
But it was showing people saying that in Congress.
Yeah, I think that was on CNBC. I think you were telling me it was a documentary about Julian Assange.
Yeah, which there's decent documentaries about him that are made in people's garages too, but
right.
Weapons of mass destruction in the form of film. But the way he broke the first one, the collateral murder one, the first big one, was he contacted like the London Times, the New York Times, and Der Spiegel in Germany, like the 3 biggest papers in those countries, and got them to like break the story of him breaking it and simultaneously release the stuff. And that gave it credibility. And I'm thinking, like, how much longer will that be needed? You know, will those people's involvement be needed in something like that?
Right.
At
right.
that level?
I don't think much longer. I mean, people my age, they don't necessarily give extra credence to stuff just because it's on CNN or Fox or Der Spiegel or whatever. I mean, if they trust the site, if they trust the person who's writing it, it's down to the individual level like that, to where they decide for themselves what to trust and what not to trust. And I think that's very empowering. And I think that that, more than anything, is what leads us to a future of freedom, is people making decisions for themselves and having access to do their own research.
Yep. You know, the guy who makes the Bearcats, those things, those tanks that they're unnecessarily selling to every small town and DHS is paying for it. He has a blog. His name is Jim Massery, J-I-M-M-A-S-S-E-R-Y. And his blog is called Jim Massery, Conservative Christian Citizen. And I went and posted a comment on there. And if people want to, I'm sure it's possible. I went on there and I said, I think you're a bad Christian because you're helping people's doors get kicked in. And I quoted some Bible verse, and I said, you're part of the problem because you're selling machines used to violate the Bill of Rights. Shame on you. You're a bad Christian, and you contribute to the suffering of innocents.
Yeah, yeah. And he really does. I mean, I don't know. I guess I got a little bit. It was hard for me to find the consistency a little bit because in the end, he is just selling a product, right? I mean, it's like a gun. Yeah. You hate the way the gun is used if it's used immorally. The thing is, though, is that who's buying these Bearcats?
I think there's something immoral about selling something that can't be bought by anybody. I really do.
When your business model is based on selling to the government.
Yeah, and taking nothing but stolen money and selling a product that's used only to oppress people. They aren't used for search and rescue. You know, I mean, you look at the ad for it, it looks like an action movie. It's got heavy metal music playing. It's got quick action cuts. It's got people jumping out of Bearcats. And one of the things that really offended me that it shows is this accessory that it has that's like a big syringe to inject gas into a house. You know, it's like an inch in diameter and 10 feet long, and you just poke the house with it and then press the button that says release gas, and it releases tear gas into a house. I mean, these things are not made for search and rescue. These things are made for having local Wacos and Ruby Ridges in every town.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. They are. And you can tell that by the design. They're designed for government goons to use stolen money to harass citizens, of which he says he is one.
If I could buy one, I wouldn't consider this guy immoral.
You think he'd sell it to, maybe that's a good question. Do you think he'd sell it to a libertarian billionaire, or do you think he only sells to the government?
He would probably sell it to a billionaire who had their own, you know, but a lot of people who are billionaires are sort of governmental in a way anyway, even if they don't like the government. I mean, at that point, you can hire a sort of private army. You can hire 20 guards who are ex-Navy SEALs to live at your house and patrol it with machine guns, you know?
Right. Of course, the Bearcat is not a defensive weapon. It wouldn't help you on your ranch if you were trying to prevent somebody from stealing it.
It would if you got inside it.
Yeah.
And then just fired at him with a 50 cal. I mean, I think Warren Buffett could have one of these on his ranch.
Yeah, but I mean, how does it help other than have, I mean, Warren Buffett could have a panic room or a bunker or something immobile that he could do that in. He wouldn't have the need to drive in.
I think this could be a defensive weapon. I mean, if you lived on the Mexican border in Arizona and you had a ranch and there was cartel activity spilling over onto your side, onto your ranch, I mean, the cartels are armed like armies, so you'd need to be armed like an army to be defensive against them.
Yeah, you're right. You'd be able to maneuver and drive to different locales and, yeah.
There's all this talk of, well, if you don't believe in gun control, where do you stop? Should libertarians be able to have nukes? Blah, blah, blah. I basically think, and I don't know what the law would be or where there should be a law, but I think it's moral for any person, any nonviolent person, to have any weapon that can specifically target one person.
Okay. So,
in self-defense, or, you know, a group of four people coming at you in self-defense.
So why do you draw the line there?
Because I don't know that I mean, maybe this is me clinging to a bit of minarchism, but I don't know where one person would have the need to have self-defense against a county. Although if the county attacked you with rockets, maybe you would.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. You don't know if somebody would have the need. But part of the libertarian or the anarchist argument is it's not up to somebody else to decide what needs another person has. Somebody doesn't even need to have a need. They can just have a want. If somebody has a desire to own something, regardless of whether or not it's irrational, as long as they don't use violent means to get it, there's nothing wrong with it.
But since we live in reality, speaking of redefining the Bill of Rights without deleting it, they're not changing the wording on some piece of paper that's protected by helium in the National Archives. They're not taking the white out and crossing things out and using magic marker to write them in, but they are in effect. And here's another one. House passes bill that will make protesting illegal at Secret Service covered events. This is a big one. This is another, like, I wake up some days and I go, what the world am I living in? This is bizarre world where, like, every week, you know, how long ago did they allow indefinite detention? January 1st, you know, it's like 3 months later, and now they're saying you can't protest anywhere the Secret Service might be, whether you know they're there or not. And to me, this is a reaction to the Tea Party, Occupy Wall Street, and William Kostrick.
Yeah, no, it's a reaction to people standing up for themselves. They want to say, you shouldn't be able to do that, guys.
And I don't blame William Kostrick. I still think he's a hero. But, you know, I think that this is exactly a reaction to the Tea Party movement, Occupy Wall Street, and William Kostrick. Now, for those who don't know, William Kostrick peacefully went to an event where Obama was appearing while William was open carrying a sidearm in New Hampshire, and made national news about it. And the Secret Service talked to him, and there was nothing they could do. And now there's something they could do.
Yeah, yeah. Now they can throw him in a cage for having a piece of metal.
Now they can throw you in a cage just for being there with a sign.
Yeah, yeah, without a gun, with a sign, just for being there. Not even a sign, maybe, just being there protesting. Or if they think you're protesting.
Free speech zones weren't enough.
Yeah, exactly. And look at how Orwellian the name of the bill is. It's called the Federal Restricted Buildings and Grounds Improvement Act. They're improving it. Yeah, improving it for who? Improving it for the statists.
Do you remember last year when a Wyoming citizen who hunts in Colorado was at a luxury hotel in Colorado where he was going to go from there to go hunting, had a legally owned and carried rifle and was walking through the hotel lobby with it where he was staying and didn't know that Nancy Pelosi was staying in the same hotel, and he got detained by the Secret Service and hassled and talked to and didn't get to go hunting and didn't get a refund and got really heavily hassled. That guy actually later apologized for what he did. That's what they
really
want us to do. Can you believe that?
He apologized. What? His lawyer probably put him up to it or something.
Probably. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's no need to apologize. And that upsets me more than anything is when people apologize for doing no wrong just because they're in trouble with the government. I don't think you should apologize. I think you should stick to your guns, pardon the pun, and explain the truth. Explain, I'm the victim here. You know, if you went hunting or were wanting to go hunting and you didn't know Nancy Pelosi was there, you didn't do anything wrong. Explain as such, because it's when we get into this attitude that, oh, I'm sorry, I angered those in power. That's when those in power get encouraged and they start to do more.
I'd say that if you did know she was there, you didn't do anything wrong. You're not there to shoot her. You're there to go shoot elk or deer, man.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, Nancy Pelosi would not make a good trophy in the trophy room. She would make me sick every time I walked into the room.
Ugh. Yeah.
So
I'm a peace-loving guy. Anywhere I go with my gun is no threat to anybody unless they threaten me.
Right, right. It's just a matter of defending yourself and taking personal responsibility. I mean, it's important to have fire extinguishers in your house, just like it's important to have guns. And it's important to recreate with guns if you feel like that's important to you. There's nothing wrong with walking down to your car with a rifle that you plan on going out and using the rifle in a perfectly legal and legitimate way.
You can subscribe to Freedom Fiends via the RSS link on the top right of any page. It's orange and marked follow. Or you can subscribe via email at the subscribe by email link at the top of the right sidebar on any page. It's a little bit below the search field. You'll need to respond to a one-time confirmation email, but after that, you will only receive an email each time a new episode posts. The Freedom Fiends respect your privacy. We will not spam you and will not sell, rent, or share your email address. And you are free to unsubscribe at any time.
Well, that's another way that they want to redefine the Bill of Rights without drawing on the paper is they want to make it hard to recreate with guns to the point mm-hmm. where there aren't a nation of riflemen. You know, in World War II, the reason Japan didn't, the reason they bombed Pearl Harbor instead of landing troops in the mainland was they said it was the, it was some high general of the Japanese army said no one could ever attack America on their own ground. There'd be a rifle behind every blade of grass. Mm-hmm. And that was true back then. You know, we were a nation of riflemen, and that has been weeded out by the collectivist, to use that word, thought, you know, to where if you draw a picture of a gun in school, they send you to a psychiatrist and make you feel like you've done something bad. To where, you know, my brother, I think I've said this before, in the 60s, my older brother was an Eagle Scout, and the Scouts had a rifle program of shooting 22s, target shooting, and they had a merit, mm-hmm. they had a merit badge. They still have a merit badge, but the classes were at my public high school, and he used to bring his 22 on the bus to school and keep it in his locker for the after-school Boy Scout classes.
Yeah, yeah. And how many school shootings were there in the 60s?
None.
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 Exactly.
And that's not just a matter of people were armed in school, which is probably some of it, but part of it is just the world has become a crazier place. You know, when you step on people's neck long enough, eventually some of their heads are going to pop and they're going to go nuts and go off and do something crazy. You know, I love this William S. Burroughs quote. It was something like, how come whenever some madman shoots a bunch of people with guns, they try to take guns away from the people who didn't do it?
Yeah, yeah. Good
and
point.
He said that in the 70s.
It's the kindergarten mentality. I mean, they ruin all of our stuff. It's like when your kindergarten teacher would say, you know, if so-and-so ruined it for everybody, now nobody can go play on such-and-such toy. And the government operates the same way. They treat us like we're a bunch of kids, and they're the ones running the whole class. And so if somebody does something, then they look at us all as criminals. They look at us all as those who should be controlled and have our freedoms taken away, which is, not only is it unconstitutional, but obviously it's immoral and stupid. And in my mind, it's going to be what creates the blowback, what creates the movement or moves the movement forward of people saying, hey, you know, we're done with this. We're not little kids. Quit treating us like it.
You know, the funny thing is there's all this like yelling about, you know, the Tea Party people and the militia people and there's all these people that want to do harm to the government. I think the people who hate the government have been incredibly patient.
How do you mean?
Whenever I read about a shooting, it's not some libertarian gun nut anarchist constitutionalist. It's some nut, or it's, you know, somebody beefing at a party, or some person who in a truly free world would be dead because they would have starved to death or been shot in a robbery. And when there's any kind of political connection, like Jared Loughner, he wasn't a freedom fighter. He was a nut with a gun. He was, you know, a conspiracy nut, Democrat, Republican, not libertarian. You couldn't really peg. He didn't have a solid agenda.
No, he was all over the map. Or if you look at the horrible shooting and bombing in Norway, that guy wanted the government to do more to limit brown people and Muslims.
That guy was racist. The guy who shot somebody in the Holocaust Museum was racist. The old man, he shot like a guard, you know, I mean, he didn't get inside and do anything. He didn't affect the organization, put it that way. He killed a rent-a-cop. But one of the things that came out after that was they killed him, they had his gun, they traced the serial number on it, and they couldn't find out where he'd bought it. And that really upset a lot of people. Like, he bought it with cash from a Sears in like 1930 or something. I mean, he'd had it since he was a kid, and it was 22. And it raised more cry of, we need to register every gun out there and know where every gun is out there.
Ugh. Yeah, how would that have helped the situation, though? The state always uses non sequiturs. The collectivists always use non sequiturs. If they would have known he had the gun, how would they have known that he was going to use it to shoot somebody? How would it have helped the situation at all?
Well, that leads me to the title of this podcast episode, which is Government Work or Real Work? I mean, either that or government work or honest work. Which do you like better?
Government work or honest work, I like better. I think government work is an oxymoron. Originally, it seemed like the title was working for the state is less honorable than being on welfare, which I would also read as, you know, welfare recipients are more moral than bureaucrats. Not that either of them are particularly moral. But the thing is, bureaucrats actually steal the money. They're the ones who only get paid because there's a process for the government to tax people involuntarily and then pay their paychecks. And sometimes people will argue with me about this and say, well, you know, they put in their 40 hours of work a week. It's hard work. They're at the office. They do such and such, you know, with cops. They risk their lives, things like that. But the thing is, there's no way to know if it's real work, if it's productive work, because the market didn't institute it. Voluntary people didn't ask for that service and pay for it willingly. So it's not real work as the way I would define it. I would define real work or productive work as something
producing
that produces something. A good. Yeah, it produces a good that people want or a service. Are therefore willing to pay for. And some of the things the state does, some of the things bureaucrats do, maybe you could make the case that, you know, there would be another institution that would do that in a free society. And that's valid, but it would look a lot differently. And that's not the way it works now. So you can't say, well, you know, there would be police in a free society, so police are valid. Well, they're not valid as they stand now, because right now we're not in a free society. And right now, every police officer's whole paycheck comes from stolen money. Nobody paid him willingly. Nobody paid him voluntarily. And those who did, those who pay their taxes and don't mind it, they could still do that in a free society. They would still be able to pay for that.
And, you know, the Sheriff Mack idea of trying to make honest cops, I dig it. And I think that he's doing a lot of educational work, but I don't know that there is an honest cop, because an honest cop, first of all, would be someone who you could walk by and smoking a joint and they would not bust you. And you'd lose your job. You couldn't do that.
No, you couldn't do that. In fact, you can even get fired for stating your opinion that the war on marijuana is ridiculous. Law enforcement against prohibition, most of them are retired cops because... No?
No, I said, that makes sense.
Well, at least most of the ones I've read about, most of the
ones who use their names.
Right. Exactly. They're folks that are retired, and so now they can talk about that because they don't have to worry about losing their jobs. And that's the other thing to me about bureaucrats, government officials, is in the end, they really can't stand up for what they think is right because their jobs are on the line. If they don't enforce the morals of the state, they aren't able to feed their families.
If you want to know how cops think, go to the website policeone.com. And just read it. Just spend an hour reading it. It's you have to be a cop and, you know, prove who you are and where you work for to have an account on there. So all the posts are from cops.
But you don't have to be a cop to read it. So
nope.
Obviously you can go read it.
Yep. Just go read it. I mean, maybe one out of five of them is not totally gung-ho on the war on the war on drugs. And maybe two out of five of them are not into the war on guns. But the ones who aren't into those wars have reservations about it and get taken to task by the other three or four out of five who just slay them. I mean, they're just like, they adamantly believe marijuana is the devil and they're doing God's work by busting heads of people that have it.
Right, right. And if you're an honest person and you really want to help people, then don't be a cop.
And often,
that's really how I feel.
Often on Police One, they'll post YouTube videos, repost YouTube videos of cops abusing people, like that guy in Ohio. Ohio's just sounding worse and worse to me. Like that guy in Ohio who, pulled over the guy who was legally concealed carrying a gun. The guy notified the cop he was carrying, and the cop just went ballistic and threatened to shoot him in the head. You know, they'll post that and then comment on it. And basically, the feeling I get is they're like, I hate when people get caught doing this. But, you know, they use the word professionalism a lot on that site. And they'll say, like, I hate when unprofessional cops like this make it hard for the rest of us who are professionals, whatever that means. But I kind of get the feeling of like, well, maybe I wouldn't do this, but I know people who do, and I hate it when they get caught.
Do the freedom fiends make you purr? Tell them so at talkback@freedomfiends.com.
The thing about using the word professionals, I think that's an oxymoron too. I think to be a professional, you have to have people voluntarily paying you to do what you do because you do it so well. that definition does not fit cops to me.
The original, you said the original title we had for this was, what was it?
Working for the state is less honorable than being on welfare.
Yeah. I just didn't feel I had the balls this week to use that title. You know, sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. Depends how much sleep I've had, how much caffeine I've had, how much tyranny has poked me.
How about cops are welfare recipients?
That too. But, you know, I mean, the original thing I thought was like, what's more ethical? You know, is it being on welfare? And I was thinking about some of my neighbors who, I mean, I've talked to a bunch of my neighbors on my block. I know them all by name. I say hi to them. I talk to them. They don't know much about me unless they're searching me on the internet. But, you know, I don't tell them a lot of my opinions. But we're friendly to each other. And I know what they do for a living. And they know what I do for a living. And we chat a little bit. And like three of the people on my block are people who work for the government in a nonviolent capacity. I mean, I guess you could say it's violent. It is violent because it's taking tax money, but they're not cops. It's like one's the garbage collector, one works for Fish and Game, and one is like a clerk in the county office. You know, so they're not out putting guns to people's heads, but they are taking a paycheck that's collected at gunpoint, and they are taking, you know, they're enabling. I mean, I would say someone who works for the DEA running around putting guns to people's heads and busting people's doors is unethical. But I would say the same thing about the secretary in the office pushing the papers.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Because they enable it. Not only do they enable it, but they're the ones who are feeding off of it. They keep the whole system going.
It's really interesting, too, talking to these people because they're good people. They're feeding their families. One of them actually provides a service to me, you know, is my garbage man. Even in statist California, my garbage collection was private. It wasn't government. I paid it to somebody else. Although I suppose if I let my garbage pile up, the state would come and do something about it. But
it was private. But was it a state or a local government granted monopoly? Like, did they contract with waste management or something and everybody had to bid for that contract?
I actually had a choice of two different companies.
OK.
So, but maybe they had a duopoly, but
They were probably at least licensed or approved.
Well, put it this way. I think if some Mexicans from the neighborhood had driven around with their truck and offered to take away my trash and I paid them, I think somebody would have stopped them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
I think so.
Anyway, of the 10 houses on my block, three of them that I know of work for the government. And other than that, they're kind of like small government Republican gun loving hunters. And one of them carries a gun. You know, they're people who seem like they'd be constitutional, but they think they're absolutely right in doing what they do. And, you know, I don't want to pick on my neighbors. This happens everywhere all over the world. But it's interesting. It's like I really kind of think the government is offended by private industry, you know.
Oh, completely.
They want to get everybody on that paycheck so people won't criticize the whole system. You know, you can criticize left if you're right. You can criticize right if you're left. But they don't want you questioning the whole system. And when I do that, when I try to do that to people like that, they think I'm insane.
Yeah.
They don't think like you're worse than a child molester, which I've heard some people say about libertarianism, like, you know, it would kill children and rape children and they'd all be in whorehouses at 10. So it's not like that. But it's like, you know, they look at me like I've got two heads or something when I start talking like that. To quote Gerald Gay, another tax eater.
What, does he look at you like you have two heads?
No, I forgot to say, one of the things he said was funny was that when he's down in Cheyenne, you know, he brings his guns with him, and he was talking after one of the sessions where they'd been voting in gun control or whatever they were doing, you know, and he was talking to a couple of the other people that he considered pro-gun or who voted pro-gun in some way. And he said, hey, I got two shotguns in my car. Let's go out to this range. It's 10 minutes away from here and go shooting. And he said, they looked at me like I had two heads. You know, he's basically pointing out that like, just because someone votes one way doesn't mean they practice it. It's more like they're doing it so they can save their office.
Yeah. Well, it's politics. Like we discussed on the last cast and the cast before, it's all a game to them. I mean, it's pro wrestling. They say what they want there in front of the public, but then they probably go think and do other things on their own time.
So, had some really sad news this week. Kai from the Bad Quaker podcast, it's Ben is the Bad Quaker and his daughter Kai does the cast with him. Her husband passed away in his sleep this week.
Yeah, that made me really sad to hear, especially because I think a few casts before that happened, he was actually, I think his name's John.
Yeah.
They had a guy named John on the cast. I'm thinking it was probably him. And it's just so weird to have heard him talk and, you know, they laughed and hearing them doing their liberty-loving podcast. And then all of a sudden he's gone.
Yeah, and he's 40-something, you know. People can die of natural causes at any age. I remember a guy younger than that, brother of someone I knew, was the when Porno for Pyros first played San Francisco, they were booked three nights, and I was hanging out with my friend Martine, who played bass in the band, and they canceled the third night because the drummer's brother had died. He died in L.A. while watching a movie in a movie theater, and he was not a drug user. He was 30-something. Didn't have any pre-existing condition and just died watching a movie. And, you know, my first question to Martine was, what movie? And he's like, Michael, that's in such bad taste. And then he said, that was my first thought too.
Well, now you got me curious. What movie was it?
We didn't find out, but someone else youngish died of natural causes this week. Andrew Breitbart.
Breitbart. Yeah. Yeah. And everybody is wondering if it was foul play just because he was so controversial and hated by, I guess, the left.
I don't think so, man. I thought about that at first, but, you know, they risk making someone a martyr if they do something like that. And also, I've known another person who died of died of an aneurysm. This is my friend Warner Harrison, who was about 50, and he was overweight, which, you know, being over 50 and being overweight are both things that can increase your chance of an aneurysm. But he was in pretty good health otherwise. He was one of the guys who really reached out to me when I was first trying to get off heroin. You know, he's one of the first people I met in NA. He took me out to dinner, bought me dinner, talked to me, you know, let me call him at 4 a.m. when I was freaking out, and was a really good guy. And I wasn't there when this happened. It was after I moved to LA, but he was speaking at the Memorial Day NA meeting, which is a big deal. It's like, you know, they get the best speaker they can for the Memorial Day party, and there's like 300 people there. And he was speaking, and he talked for about 30 minutes. Thunderous applause. He walked off to go into the bathroom and just tipped over in the bathroom. And next person that walked in the bathroom found him and called 911. Oh. And, you know, he was dead.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it really is. One day you're here and the next day you're gone. I mean, all of us have to go sometime, I guess. And it's just really sad to think about it when it happens before, you know, what we'd expect would be your time.
Yeah. I mean, the two big deaths I've dealt with in my life were my mother and my daughter, but they were both cancer and they both were a long time coming.
Right. They didn't come out of nowhere, even though they were still.
Yeah, I haven't been close to anyone who's died suddenly. I mean, I've had a few sort of using buddies back in the day who died of drug overdoses, but that's expected too when you're doing a lot of street heroin. Because it's illegal.
You sort of understand the risk. Yeah, because
if you're getting it from a doctor, it probably wouldn't be. But yeah. Anyway, our thoughts go out to Kai and the whole family. And I don't know her well. I've only talked with her once. I asked her something about what microphone she uses, and she was like, I don't know, ask my dad. So I, you know, ended up talking to Ben a lot more than I've talked to her. But
yeah, they name drop us occasionally, and we name drop them. We really like the folks over there at Bad Quaker, and our hearts do go out to them. She mentioned Freedom Fiends once, and he did too. She mentioned you specifically.
What about me?
She said she was talking to you on Facebook. It was about some libertarian thought. I don't remember what it was.
Oh, that was before we knew she was his daughter.
I knew she was his daughter. You didn't know yet.
Yeah, anyway. I didn't know that because he did a bunch of solo episodes. She was out of town or something. And, you know, I started listening to the Bad Quaker podcast when it was just Ben, and then heard ones later with her and liked him even better.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. And he now, tends to be
now
more
they introduce
somber.
Themselves. She, what?
She makes
now
him.
They go ahead.
You go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay, I will. She makes him less dire. When it's just him, it's not really dire, but it's really somber kind of sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's got this like really energetic, kind of goofy, happy spirit, and it makes him a little more so.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. She definitely livens it up. She's kind of bubbly and happy.
Yep, but either the ones that are solo or the ones that are both of them make me feel better in the middle of the night when I'm worried about the world. I recommend the Bad Quaker podcast highly.
Definitely.
Did you hear the Disindoctrination podcast yesterday?
No, I didn't. I haven't updated my pod feed in a while.
It was so funny, man. It was it seems like Kevin hasn't been showing up, so Garrett has been getting Eddie Free to fill in.
Okay, cool.
You know Eddie Free?
He's a pretty big name in the New Hampshire Free State thing.
And they did this cast yesterday that was like, it was my favorite disindoctrination podcast episode ever, even though it probably contained less actual information than any of them. It was just really funny. I think they were both baked. It reminded me of like college radio 20 years ago. And they did this thing. It was pretty well done and planned out. It was like Garrett got a bunch of clips of Alex Jones like screaming and kept cutting them in as if Alex Jones was in the room and like interrupting him. And then finally was like, Alex, I invited you here to contribute and you're just screaming. I'm not going to like halfway through just cut him off. But it's Alex Jones saying things like, I did not come on this show for your amusement. And I don't know, just all this hilarious crap. It was great.
Did he have the clip where Alex Jones is like, Skynet, Skynet, Skynet?
No, but he did.
When he was on RTV talking about Skynet taking over the world.
He said Alex Jones was his gateway drug to true liberty.
Ah, everyone has a different one.
Yep.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
So, Nima.
What's up, Michael?
You know, I'm having a blast today. I just wanted to say.
Having a blast? Doing what? The Freedom Fiends? Or you got something else you're doing on the side?
No, I'm having a blast with you doing the Freedom Fiends. It's kind of the high point of my week. And especially right now.
Oh, yeah. Man, Freedom Fiends, it feeds our soul. We say it a million times, and we'll say it a million times more. This is what we love to do. Spitting the truth and just letting our minds go off in every different direction.
I have a couple movie recommendations I'll say real quick. I don't know if these are stuff you'd like, but some fiend might like them. One is a William S. Burroughs movie called William S. Burroughs, A Man Inside. And it's a documentary about the writer, the junkie gay writer who died a few years ago at the age of 80-something.
In Arrested Development, didn't the Anal Rapist character have a book called The Man Inside of Me?
You know, he did.
But this movie is not a gay porno, correct?
No.
Okay.
Although he was, like, so unpolitically correct, even a lot of gay people didn't want to attach themselves to him.
Literally or figuratively?
Literally, figuratively.
Both.
He was a gun nut, for one thing. And he spoke, starting in, like, the 50s, about the police state growing in America. And he gives a talk in the movie Drugstore Cowboy. He plays a junkie priest in that movie, and he's great. He plays junkie priest who's really kind of poetic and funny. And he gives a rap in there about the drug war leading to everyone being watched all the time, whether they use drugs or not.
Ah, okay. So he was liberty-minded from the very early days.
Well, he was a junkie and a homosexual in the 50s and out about it. And both of those things could get you thrown in prison in the 50s.
Right.
So
he was freedom minded because he had seen the oppression of the status quo, of the status quo.
Yeah.
And so he knew he had to fight against it.
I have two connections to that movie, tertiary connections to that movie. One is, well, to him, one is the movie Drugstore Cowboy features an actor named James Remar playing a drug cop. James Remar is in the Selby movie I made because he was a friend of Selby's.
Okay, cool.
And the ending of this movie about William S. Burroughs takes something or borrows an idea from the Selby movie. You know, and I'm not saying I'm owed something. I'm kind of honored.
Of course.
I'm absolutely sure the people who made that movie saw my movie. They do a thing with his last words that he ever wrote on paper that's very, very similar to what we did.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the great thing about art is somebody can take an idea and run with it in a different direction for a different subject. And it makes things richer, not poorer. So again, with the IP hating, but I mean, that's what art should be. It should be taking ideas and remixing them and making something new and great.
Which leads to the next movie, but I want to talk a little more about William S. Burroughs. William S. Burroughs got away with something that you probably could get away with in a libertarian paradise. This is horrible, but he shot his wife after she volunteered to let him shoot a shot glass off her head.
Oh,
William Tell style.
A shot glass, not even a beer glass. A shot glass is pretty small.
Yeah, in a bar in Mexico. He probably got away with it because he's rich. He probably bribed the federales. But,
yeah,
you know, in a libertarian paradise, I think that would be legal to volunteer to let someone shoot something off your head. And I don't think anyone would go to jail if you died.
Good luck finding another wife, though.
I know. Well, he went totally gay after that. So okay. There you go.
Maybe that was his plan all along. Maybe he convinced her that he was a good shot. And
ugh, I don't think so, man.
No,
I don't think he was I think he was a moral person. But
what do you have to do to be convinced that it's a good idea to shoot at your wife?
I think you have to be drunk. Ugh. And on speed.
I don't like to blame drugs for things, but maybe
her drug of choice was speed and his drug of choice was heroin, and they were drunk in a Mexican bar. I think that's a recipe for keep your gun in your holster.
Yeah, definitely. What would he have benefited from if he actually would have shot the shot glass off? I mean, did he have a bet with some local Mexicans there?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
That's just, I can't ever imagine pointing a gun in my wife's general direction.
I know. I would never. I would be like the robots on Westworld before they go crazy of like, cannot point gun in direction of human. Yeah.
You're saying there was another movie you wanted to review?
Yeah, there's a movie called Shut Up, Little Man.
Okay.
I think we've talked before about the Shut Up, Little Man phenomenon. There were two guys in San Francisco when I lived there that lived near me, you know, young hipsters who lived next door to these two crazy drunken old men who were roommates in the next apartment, who constantly screamed at each other at the top of their lungs. And these guys started taping it.
Okay.
And made tapes of it for their friends. And people made copies and copies of copies. It was kind of like it went viral before the internet.
Okay. It was kind of like boy fights on Arrested Development.
Yeah. I remember someone playing me, Little Mike, my friend Little Mike. There's probably at least one person listening to Freedom Fiends who knows who Little Mike is. Little Mike played me a tape of this, probably when it was still happening. They lived in the Lower Haight near us. And it became a phenomenon to where like a record company put out CDs of these recordings and somebody made a play of it. And then someone in Hollywood wanted to buy the rights of it to make a movie of it.
Nice.
And the thing was, they originally put out the tapes with a thing that said, there's no copyright on this. This is a public service. Do with it whatever you want. Make any artistic derivations of it that you want. It was kind of like pre-Creative Commons.
Yeah.
You know, before Creative Commons, they came up with the same idea. And I came up with the same idea before it, too. It's out there. It's in the universe. And then once Hollywood started calling, they put a copyright notice on their tapes.
Mm-hmm. They saw the money signs, the dollar signs flash in their eyes.
And this movie is very interesting. It has a lot of like audio of the tapes with reenactments with puppets or animations or actors.
Okay.
And then they have interviews with the two guys who made the tapes, who are like in their 40s now. And one of the guys is dead, but one of them is still alive and like was, you know, dying of alcoholism in some shitty hotel. And they went and found him and gave him $300 and basically bought his life rights. Like, which is not legitimate. Like, going to someone, you can't get someone drunk and then have them sign a contract, but they did it on camera.
What if they're already drunk?
Well, if someone's never sober, I don't know. But the whole thing was very interesting to me, but also kind of sleazy. Because first of all, I think you would have all the rights in the world, morally and legally, to record what you hear in your apartment.
Yeah.
If they're that loud. And then make tapes and give it to people and let them make tapes and not make money on it. I think you'd have every right in the world to do that. And I think that would be perfect compensation for having neighbors like that. But they didn't only record from their apartment. They took a microphone and taped it to a hockey stick and stuck it out the window so it was in the open window of their neighbors.
Mm, yeah, that's a little bit. That seems to violate property rights.
It's eavesdropping, yeah.
If it was it in the window or was it just sort of outside of it?
No, it was in front of the window. And they actually, there's a recording of it where one of them goes, the neighbors are taping us. What? Look, there's a microphone. And then instead of complaining about it or saying they shouldn't do it, they used it as a witness for their arguments. Like, well, I just want to say that he's an asshole and a thief. No, you're an asshole and a thief. And it was
all right.
It was two guys who'd known each other for decades. One of them was gay and one of them was homophobic, which made for some interesting arguments.
And they lived together?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, they were okay. Both on, I think one of them was a vet and was on VA benefits and the other was on welfare. This was like something that was famous in San Francisco when I lived there in the 80s. And I'm really pleased that someone's made a movie of it. Someone in Australia made a movie of it and it was paid for by like Australian government money. It says at the end, like, I think that Australia was happy to do it because it made fun of Americans. But
probably. Yeah.
One thing I really liked in it was they show some pictures of the two hipster kids who made the recordings back in the day when they lived in this house. And one of them is like wearing a Bukowski t-shirt. And I'm thinking, so you idolized that kind of drunk until you had to live next door to one.
What's Bukowski?
Bukowski. Okay, you're going to get...
I'm going to get schooled on this.
Yeah. You don't know who Bukowski is, and you probably didn't know who William S. Burroughs is, did you?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Bukowski was another writer from the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s. Actually, I think he died in the 90s. You ever see the movie Barfly?
No.
There was a movie made of one of his stories.
Okay.
Stars Mickey Rourke as a drunk. Mm-hmm. He kind of was to alcohol what William S. Burroughs was to heroin. And Selby was kind of lumped into the same group, although he didn't consider himself part of that. William S. Burroughs was part of the Beats.
Yeah.
The Beat Poets. It was him and I can't remember the other two guys. Jack Kerouac and I'm flaking on it, but I'd know it. The gay Jewish guy. Anyway, those are the Beat Poets. And Bukowski was kind of lumped in with the Beats, but didn't like to be. And Selby was kind of lumped in with the Beats, but didn't like to be. They were just four or five writers that changed the face of American writing, cinema, music, culture, laws, you know, obscenity laws, etc.
Okay.
They were heavy cats back in the day.
Meow. I dig it, Michael.
Yeah, I dig it. We still use a lot of that words.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
So this House bill that passed that made protesting illegal at Secret Service covered events only had 3 votes against it in the House, which is what, 335 people? That really disgusted me.
We don't even get a segue there.
Speaking of oppression. Yeah, I forgot to mention that, though. Only 3 people voted against it. Ron Paul, who you'd expect. Justin Amash, who, if you don't know who he is, you should check him out. He's a Ron Paul-like Republican in Michigan, and he's the second youngest guy in Congress. He's like 33 or something.
Yeah, I was reading his wiki page. He's a real cool guy. He ties for a number of no votes, and he used to get critiqued for voting no on everything back when he was in like the state legislature over there in Michigan.
And Paul Braun from Georgia. I don't know anything about him, but it really disgusted me that only 3 congressmen out of 435, you know, only 3 people voted to save
free speech,
the First Amendment, basically, you know.
Disgusts me, but doesn't surprise me at all.
It does surprise me because usually with these votes, there's 20 or 30 against. How many votes were there against the indefinite detention? There were more than 3 against.
It's true, but that was in the news. I mean, it was a political issue.
This was only covered. This is ignored by the mainstream media.
Right.
And ironically, it was reported by Russia Today. And I say ironically because you can't protest in Russia. I mean, a bunch of people just got jailed for protesting Putin.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they love to show America being tyrannical, which is what RT does, which they have their motives, but at least we get to see a bit of good reporting on stuff like that.
We get some news. Yeah. The Colbert Report covered that really well. They said, and in other news, Putin won a majority of the votes in his reelection with his campaign slogan. And they showed like an America style red, white and blue lawn sign that said, "Vote Putin or he'll shoot your family." You know, it's kind of funny. He covered this thing that I didn't really realize, but Iran, Israel, and America are all saber rattling right now. And it turns out that all 3 countries have elections coming up.
Yeah. Scott Horton's been talking about that a lot. And Justin Raimondo does too, when he basically says, you know, you can really boil down a lot of foreign policy decisions to whatever's going on politically in the country at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, Obama's going to act on how much the Israel lobby is pressuring him, how much the Israel firsters are pressuring him to do different actions in the Middle East. Same thing with Israel, same thing in Iran. I mean, when elections happen in Iran, they like to portray America as a bad guy, and that helps get Ahmadinejad reelected.
I'm waiting for a bill that's going to make it illegal to call politicians Nazis. Speaking of...
You're waiting on it because you want it to happen?
No. So somebody said of your plan to open carry a shotgun in California, riding through California while open carrying a shotgun is like going into an all-black church with a KKK robe and screaming white power with a bullhorn.
Yeah, we fiend sourced that. We got a lot of comments basically saying it was a bad idea, a non-starter. I shouldn't do it. And okay, fine. I guess I won't. I guess I'll just get eaten by bears because I'm camping in bear country without any protection. I don't know. Maybe I'll buy some bear mace or something.
I'll keep your name alive after the bears eat you. Bear mace might not be a bad idea. Actually, the feds who patrol bear areas carry guns, but they also carry bear mace. I don't know if that's a PC thing or if they want to be able to sprinkle them with some crack, you know, spray them with bear mace after they shoot them or what. But bear mace actually can be as effective or more effective than a gun. At least of a gun, it's like, for a gun to be effective, you need a rifle that's semi-auto where you could just shoot shot after shot. I don't even know if I'd trust a shotgun for it because you're going to have to cycle it. It's going to take a while the bear is eating you.
Right.
But bear mace makes them go away.
Yeah, that's true. The thing is, man, I want to carry my guns on me, man. What's so wrong with that?
I know.
I don't understand it. And you don't understand because it's silly to have to deal with these kinds of laws. And I'm going to be going on an adventure. I'm going to be camping in backpack country, you know, in the back country, away from everybody. And why can't I just carry the gear on me that I want? It just really pisses the fuck out of me. And I understand I have to be a realist, and I get away from that a lot just because... because it upsets me. It upsets me that I have to change what I do for my life because of nanny staters, because of kindergarten laws.
You know, a lot of these laws kind of strike me as the dinosaur thrashing in the tar pits, or like,
oh, yeah,
the drunken child king yelling, off with their heads. And I'm just wondering when people are going to have had enough. But my fear is that by the time people have had enough, it's going to be so illegal to breathe that you won't be able to do anything about it. You know, I mean, I really think that the plan is to get us unarmed in our homes, not able to travel freely, and just protesting on the internet only, and then they're going to turn the internet off.
Yeah, I think that might be their plan. I don't think they're going to be successful at turning the internet off.
No, which leads me to the pigeon plan B.
What's the pigeon plan B?
Well, the pigeon plan B is everyone should be saving all the episodes of Freedom Fiends so they can send them around by carrier pigeon on USB drives. You know, I've got a yard full of pigeons, man. I've got so many pigeons. I mean, if the hit the fan and I had to eat pigeon meat, I wouldn't even need to waste ammo on it. I have so many, I could just go out there with a blanket
and
throw a blanket over them and catch 10 of them, you know, and 20 would fly away.
Squirrels too.
I know. Actually, I just found out that there is an actual internet protocol. You know, they release these different, when they update how the internet works, the scientists who do it do these RFCs, request for comment. And there's an RFC 2549 that was issued a few years back. I'll link it. It's called Avian Transmission Protocol. And it's the idea of sending, you know, it's a white paper with like a blueprint of how to send internet information over pigeons.
Nice. For if the servers crash.
I saw this thing on the History Channel the other day about in World War II, America tried using pigeon-guided missiles.
Wait, that's real? I thought you were just bullshitting me.
Yeah, no, that's real. Pigeons, if they're looking out a window and there's only one object out there, will peck at the object. So what they did was they made missiles that had a window in the front of them with a pigeon in it and a little electrode on his beak. And then they had like contacts on the window and it wouldn't work on land because there'd be too many other objects. But if they were on the sea and shooting at a boat or a ship, the pigeon would peck at the window in the direction of the ship and it would guide the missile to it.
Geez, pigeons sure are useful, aren't they?
And they actually successfully did this with unarmed missiles as a test, but it never got approved because people didn't want to trust pigeons. And then soon after that, they came up with radio-guided missiles. But
Right. The pigeons could take over the world.
Yeah, they actually tried doing it with cats, but cats pass out when you launch them in a missile.
So this is the government putting random animals in missile heads and launching them.
The government wants to kill cats.
Right. Yeah. Ugh. Wow.
But if I could figure out something to do with pigeons, man, I got a lot of them.
Okay, fair enough.
I just like the idea of I really would not need a gun to hunt the pigeons. I think a blanket would work fine.
Okay.
Good deal.
So did you see hacked school board election names Drunken Robot the winner in Washington, D.C.?
Yes, I saw that. Yeah, it was a school board election, I guess. And of course, the winner because of the hackers was Bender from Futurama. You all know Bender well. And the funny thing was, you know, they were saying, well, this will be this new secure system. It'll be more efficient. It'll save us money during the elections. And they even challenged hackers to try to hack the system. But then according to the article, the hackers were aided by the fact that the engineers who set up the supposedly bulletproof system used the word admin as both the username and the password of the servers. Yeah,
they wanted press. I think they wanted it to get hacked.
You think?
Yeah.
Just a publicity stunt. Yeah, could have been. Could have been.
Although, I think Bender would make a better representative than most politicians, although Bender does not abide by the non-aggression principle. But
no, Bender steals.
But he probably would be in favor of legalizing guns and weed.
he would be, but he's a thief, so I don't know, maybe the politicians would like him,
especially since he doesn't like humans, and guns would hurt humans more than they would hurt him.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
So I had another comment on that movie I saw, Shut Up, Little Man. I have this thought. Andy Warhol said everybody will be famous in the future for 15 minutes. And that's kind of come to pass with the internet in a way. But I would take that further to say that now that documentary filmmaking has become so cheap and accessible, I think eventually there will be a documentary film about every random thought we've ever had, every niche, no matter how niche it is. You know, I mean, Shut Up, Little Man, that's pretty damn niche.
Yeah.
And I actually saw another movie called The Parking Lot Movie, which is about the parking lot that I lived next door to in Charlottesville, Virginia. How weird is that?
You actually spent your time watching a movie about a parking lot.
Well, I did, because it's about the people who worked in the little hot dog stand taking the ticket money for the parking lot. It was kind of this, and a good friend of mine, John Beers, was one of them, and he's in the movie. So, of course, I watched it. But it's a good movie. And, you know, really good documentaries find the human element that's accessible to everybody,
right,
regardless of what it's about. I mean,
yeah,
parking lot movie sounds pretty stupid, but really it's about young slackers having their first stupid job and finding their path in life while having that job.
Right, right. You can find that human element in just about anything. There's a Simpsons episode about that where they like have it's a bunch of vignettes of all the different things that's going on in Springfield in a given day. And so
that's kind of based on or inspired by Pulp Fiction, the way it works. And there's actually some vignettes of Pulp Fiction in there. The one where in Pulp Fiction where the guys are held prisoner and sodomized in the redneck pawn shop. That's in there, but it's the comic book store guy, and the redneck is played by the one-armed military historian salesman.
Right, right. The army surplus owner.
And the fat cop is played by Chief Wiggum.
Of course. Freedom Fiends. So apparently this is another tyranny we can laugh at. There's a guy named Joshua Thompson who filed a class action lawsuit against AMC movie theaters, alleging that they overcharge for snacks that they sell, you know, popcorn and whatnot. And ABC reported this, and then David Kramer sort of reposted it on Lou Rockwell.
How can you be immoral in what you charge?
Exactly. It's your movie theater. If you don't want to pay for popcorn, then don't buy the popcorn.
And I say the free market is already taking care of this, because part of the reason that file sharing has become so popular is because movie theaters cost more and more and you get less and less. You know, when I was a kid, a movie was 75 cents and popcorn was cheap and there was nobody bugging you with cell phones. And now you go into a movie and it's like, for two people to go to a movie and get snacks, it's like $40. And there's a bunch of people talking on their cell phones, and you have to look at a bunch of stupid ads for movies you're never going to see. And why don't you want to download it illegally and watch it at home?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the only thing movie theaters are good for that I can remember is young people who want to get
jobs and don't have a place to do it at. You go to the back of the theater.
DJ and I were talking about that. We were talking about, like, you know, with home theaters getting so much more like theaters, it's like, I said to her, the only thing that movie theaters offer now is they show the movies first. And that's often circumvented by people releasing it on the internet before it's in the theaters.
Yep.
And I said, what do movie theaters offer? And she said, well, young people who want to go make out. And I said, well, they could be replaced with a place like that. Hey, mom and dad, I'm going down to the Jobatorium. See you later.
Well, see, that's the thing that movie theaters offer is you can say, I'm going to the movies, and your mom will be like, oh, right. Okay, great. Have fun. Here's $20.
When I was a kid, I would just say I was going to the library, and I often went to the library, but then went and smoked pot behind the library and then went back and hung out in the library and read.
There you go. Well, this story reminded me of that thing you said in the last cast, or maybe the cast before, about how, you know, a libertarian is somebody who presses mute when the loud TV commercial comes on.
Yeah.
And a statist is somebody who writes their congressman. So I think a statist is just as apt to file a class action lawsuit against the people.
Yeah. I saw another one. It was Ohio man given choice of Facebook apology or jail. And it was a guy who'd been divorced by his wife and she'd been shitty to him. And so he just went on Facebook and posted a bunch of crap about her. And she took him to court and the judge said, you have to say something nice about your ex-wife every day on Facebook for a month or you're going to jail.
What?
And I'm thinking, like, that's not a real amends. A forced apology is not any kind of apology. Forced money might be some kind of amends, but forced apology isn't.
Well, what does he owe her in that situation anyway? I feel like there shouldn't be. I mean, obviously, if you're having a spat with a lover, that's what Facebook was invented for. One of the reasons, right? I mean, I don't see as him doing anything wrong. Even if he lied about her, people just take it with a grain of salt and say, oh, that's just so-and-so bitching because she likes some other man better.
Well, Facebook was actually invented for Ivy Leaguers to hook up romantically with other Ivy Leaguers, but
yeah.
It kind of got out of the box and spread.
At any rate, I mean, that's one of the main things Facebook is used for nowadays is people bitching about their love lives. So I don't see how a judge has any say one way or the other in the matter.
So while we're on the subject of silly, insane tyrannies, epic autocorrect fail. Schools locked down over texting mix-up. Did you read that one?
Yeah, I saw that. Dude said he was going to be at such and such behind the library or whatever, and autocorrect changed it to gunman is going to be at such and such location.
Yeah.
So people flipped out. The cops told the school to shut down.
He sent it to a wrong number. Also, now, if I got that text as a wrong number, I would text back and say, huh?
Right.
Or call the person and say, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and they'd say, oh, I'm sorry. I was trying to type gonna be at the library to my girlfriend. And I would forget about it. You know, some nanny person got it and called the cops and they locked down a school.
Yeah. Tyranny today.
Well, you know, they have all these militarized police groups in place now. They don't want to just sit around. They want to be out with the heavy metal music playing.
Yeah, that's the point I was just going to make. It allows them to have a little fun in their boring day. So, yeah, school lockdown, exciting. Oh, and we used to love that at the news station, too. I mean, it would never be anything, but bomb scare, school lockdown, you know, that's something you can go live out in front of. Something you can, you know, do a live bump and cut into whatever show's going on at the moment. Man, it's something for the folks who thrive on that stuff to do.
Mayor proposes ban on caps and hoodies.
Why?
I don't know. Because, well, he says it's so they could track people on their security cameras. I think it's that. And it's I don't like youth culture and I'm afraid of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, wait, so this was the mayor. See, because when I first read the headline, for some reason, I was thinking principal, because, you know, usually it's schools who are obsessed with dress code. So this guy's saying in the whole city, nobody could wear caps or hoodies.
Right.
Wow. Wow. You know, the only other time I heard about a ban on a headgear recently or, you know, that I can remember was in Iran when the Shah came to power. He banned the chador, you know, the thing women wear over their heads. And so that's what it's coming to. We're acting like tyrannical dictators in the Middle East now, apparently.
Yeah.
F*** that noise, man. That shit's so square.
Did you get a chance to look at any of these nanny TV sites, parentstv.org? We have a better Alexa ranking than them, which I like. But it's a site where people can complain. It's got a form where you can online, you can complain to the FCC about something you don't like on TV.
Why not just not watch it?
I know.
Why do people have it in their heads that it's their job to decide what other people watch. I don't get it, Michael. I just don't understand it.
I know. And they, you know, they have like reviews of shows they don't like and what they don't like about them. Family Guy is one they really don't like.
Right.
And then they have reviews of ones that are on cable and they say, unfortunately, the FCC can't do anything about this because it's on cable, but we want you to know about this problem.
Right. Call your congressman and ask them to give FCC the power to regulate cable as well.
I know. That's what I get from that between the lines.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Oh, that's every nanny stater's wet dream, right?
I have a complaint about a libertarian billionaire. PayPal recently stopped letting people use PayPal for erotic ebooks, which I have heard so much bad about PayPal. And I know that there are competitors, but they don't have the installed user base that makes PayPal easy to use.
Right.
And PayPal's CEO is a libertarian. Why is he letting all these really unlibertarian things happen, like funds being seized and not letting... I mean, we're not even talking smut. We're talking like literary fiction that's erotic. They won't allow you to pay for it with PayPal or sell it with PayPal.
Right. What I would call girl porn. You know, stories about throbbing members instead of pictures.
Well, stories about romance and throbbing members instead of pictures. But can this guy really be called a libertarian? I mean, I think he's beyond beltway libertarian. Like, he's one of those rich guys who doesn't want the government to touch his pile and his or whatever he does on the side. But,
well, it's his company, right? I mean, I know. He owns PayPal. He can decide whatever rules he wants as far as what people use the service for, right? I mean, he has the right to refuse service to any customer.
And I would like to say that if you want to make a donation to Freedom Fiends, you can do so through PayPal on our site. We got a $20 donation this week. I want to thank him for that.
Yeah.
Thank the anonymous person who wants to remain anonymous for that.
Thank you very much. The thing I'm thinking, though, is maybe they're getting heat from some regulatory body.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this in the cast before, that a lot of what goes on with companies and regulatory bodies is unseen. You know, they come for a visit. They have a sort of list of things that they find not necessarily illegal, but things that they're looking at or investigating. And companies will usually bend over backwards just because when you have a cabinet level organization on your ass, you want to try to make them happy because they have a lot of power, you know, a lot more power than they should have. And so I'm just speaking anecdotally here, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was some kind of regulatory body giving PayPal a look over right now. And so that's sort of why they're doing these kinds of things.
And I wonder how much of that is just the nature of government and how much of it is actually what I would call a conspiracy, like some integrated, planned, central planned thing. You know, there's this phrase, I'm going to link this on the Wikipedia page on this. It's a good phrase. It's revolution from above. And it means vast, quick change coming from elitists rather than from the people. And I think that's a lot of what's going on right now. And, you know, elitist doesn't mean educated to me. I'm not anti-education. There are elitists, you know, there's elitists in Wyoming that do things because they think they're better than anybody else and they can't even punctuate correctly. And then there are elitists with Harvard degrees like Obama. And then people who complain about Obama being an elitist like Santorum, who actually has one more degree from an Ivy League school than Obama does. But, you know, to me, elitist doesn't mean education. I'm definitely not anti-education. We're not anti-education, but we are anti-thinking you're above everyone else and smarter than them and can use guns and force to make them do things because you think it's a good idea.
Well, the last thing is what gets me. Fine. If you think you're better than everybody else, great. Just don't think that because you're better than everybody else that you can then control the people that you consider lesser, and it is your moral right or duty or even option to do that.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
You know, generally, I'm pretty ambivalent about religious people and religion. I'm getting less like that. I'm getting more animosity towards religion. Part of the reason is because, and this isn't everybody who's religious, but a lot of religious people really seem to want to use the government guns to make their religion enforced. I think that's why we're seeing the big showings with Romney and Santorum.
Yeah.
And not so much with Ron Paul, even though Ron Paul is adamantly Christian, but he doesn't want to use government guns to make sure gay people can't get a piece of paper like the other two.
I think the pitfall there is I don't blame it on the religion. I mean,
right.
Nowhere in the Bible to me or in Jesus's teachings does it say that you should use the state to enforce these things.
Jesus was very anti-state. I mean, the classic example is Jesus overturning the tables of the money changers. And if you know what that was about, the money changers were people outside the temple, outside the Jewish temple, who sold forgivenesses, you know, sold animals to be sacrificed and had a government monopoly on doing that. And Jesus, he was violent. He committed an act of violence, not against a person, but against property. He flipped their tables over and said, "This is not what my Father wants." And that was kind of the beginning of Jesus being persecuted by the state. Jesus was killed by the state,
yeah,
for opposing the state. And that's something every Christian should realize. You know, that makes a lot more sense in the grand scheme of things than the old covenant saying you can't be gay and, you know, eat shellfish.
Right. Well, he also rejected using the state's power to get his will. Satan took him up and showed him all the nations of the world and said, these could all be yours because they're mine, which, you know, means that Satan is the state and the state is Satan. Jesus rejected it. He didn't say, yeah, sure, give me control of all the world's governments and then we'll have peace on earth and God's government. No, he didn't say that. He said, whatever, dude, and walked away.
He refused to sell out.
He refused to sell out for the state because he knew that the state is Satan. The state is evil.
Yeah.
And these days, people don't realize that. They think that, you know, like Santorum says, they think the state should have the power to ban sodomy or ban birth control or whatever it is.
Yeah. And, you know, if the state bans sodomy, it's not going to stop sodomy. Sodomy was illegal in America in most states until right before I was born and then passed when I was born in some states. Texas just legalized gay sex 10 years ago.
They had to because there was a Supreme Court ruling that said that their law banning it was illegal or unconstitutional.
And that came out of a case of two cops who were walking around an apartment building and there was a slightly open door on an apartment and they smelled pot. So they went in and they found two gay guys having sex and arrested them for having sex. And that was the case that led to the Supreme Court.
Yep.
And it was because they smelled f***ing weed outside the house.
Yeah. Yeah. All the tyrannies tied together. We always say freedom's one piece. You can't separate it. Same thing with tyranny. As soon as you tyrannize one thing, the tyranny seeps into everything else.
Literally, in the way that cops use one thing to get to another. You know, cops are taught in cop school, try to pull someone over for anything and then try to get into their car, whether you get permission or get probable cause or whatever you do.
Yep.
You know, and they use the war on drugs to f*** with everything else, to f*** with your gun rights. You know, there's a good one that is in our movie. Max says, you know, they say, where did you get that $10,000 from? If you can't prove where you got it from, we're going to take it because it might be drug money. Mm-hmm. You know, people that are strongly into one freedom like homeschooling or religious freedom or gun rights should be totally opposed to the drug war because the drug war enables that. You know, a lot of people think, well, I don't take drugs. That doesn't apply to me. I don't care if drugs are illegal, but you should care because they will use those immoral drug laws to try to get you on something else anyway.
Yep. And at the same time, the converse is true. If you believe that certain tyranny is evil and you're railing on your Facebook about it, about, oh my God, they want to ban birth control, then wise up and realize that the power that allows them to do that is the same power that allows them to ban pot, ban guns wherever you want them, ban all sorts of things. It's the power to ban. It's the power to control that we should be fighting against because that's what allows them to do these kinds of things.
Squares.
Squares, man. I'm telling you. Well, yeah. We were trying to end on a positive note, and I guess we didn't do it there.
I think we did. We could still end on a more positive note.
You got one for me?
I don't know, man. There's so much tyranny in my notes here. You got one for me?
I got one. I've got a personal victory. My gun, whenever I carry it, I always accidentally press the mag release. And so every time I get out of my car, I got to check for my mag. And I was doing some research and I realized that working with Kydex isn't that hard. All those really fancy, expensive Kydex holsters, you know, like the Super Tuck and Crossbreed and all that, you know, they're not that hard to make yourself. Go to Amazon.com, buy yourself some Kydex. I did it in my kitchen the other day. Just popped the Kydex sheet in the oven.
Now, do you think it's safe safe putting plastic in your oven?
It doesn't smoke. There's a few fumes, and most of the folks online either do it in their oven or in a toaster oven that they have set aside for it.
If I were going to do a lot of that, I would get a toaster oven that I only used for that. I don't like the idea of putting plastic in an oven to melt it and then cooking food in it later.
Well, that's the other thing. It doesn't melt. It just sort of gets kind of wimpy, like kind of like a wet noodle. It doesn't like leave residue or anything like that. But yeah, if I do more projects, I probably will get myself a toaster oven and dedicate it to that. I mean, you can get a toaster oven at Goodwill for what, $10? So
maybe that's what you're going to do to quit your day job, is start something called Anarchy Holsters.
You know what? I could. In fact, I was looking online for some fancy Anarchy decals to put on my holster and my shotgun scabbard, which is my other big project I'm going to make with my Kydex.
Just because of that name, I think it'd be popular among people who aren't even anarchists.
Right, like the folks on the Libertarian Gun Owners Facebook page.
Or just people like rock and rollers, you know?
Yeah.
Anarchy's a rock and roll word.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, that's another good note to end it on. In response to our conversation about me open carrying a shotgun in California, the Libertarian Gun Owners reposted that episode on their Facebook page. So,
oh, good.
Nice shout out to that. And then on a few posts below that, they've got this picture. I don't know if it's Photoshopped or if it's real, but it made my heart be like, aw. There was a convenience store called Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms was the name of the convenience store. And I was like, yeah, that's the way it should be. It should be a convenience store.
That's what ATF should stand for. Yeah. Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives.
Yeah. Like, yeah, wife, I'm just going to go over to the ATF, pick up a few things. I'll be back after work.
We don't have or condone explosives. Just saying that so the Fed goons that I know are listening to us. I know they're listening to us.
Because there's that one listening station there in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, we get constantly. Either we got a fan in D.C. or someone's job is to listen to us. But there was actually a new thing this week of the goons released a list of words to look for in social networking. Mm-hmm. And I think we use about 20 of them in every episode and every show notes description.
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say, you know, I actually got to see some of the software that they use for that when I visited our national lab here in Washington State. It's one of, I guess they have a bunch of different national labs around the country.
As part of your old job.
As part of my old job, yeah.
Well, aren't those called fusion centers?
No. This has been around forever. It's called the Pacific Northwest Laboratory. Technically, it's owned by a private company called Battelle, but I mean, that's all they do, is they do these government centers where they do all this research, and they sell some of it to private companies, so that's how they get away with not really being a government agency. And they showed me this new software they were working on. They called it Fighting Cyber Terrorism, Cyber Threats, and it basically can read, you know, billions of words from everywhere all day long and pick out, you know, the hot spots or pick out trends and patterns.
But, you know, it still has to be vetted by people when they find something interesting.
Yep.
And here's what I say. When the next terrorist attack hits, the feds are going to be unprepared for it because they were busy listening to Freedom Fiends.
Yeah. Of course, I think they want to be unprepared for it, right? I mean, crisis breeds more tyranny, and it breeds more government work.
I'm going to end on this. I saw a really good movie series that I'd recommend. It's about the lunacy of the war on drugs. Do you know that American miniseries called Traffic? That had Michael Douglas and his wife in it.
I thought that was an actual movie. I saw that.
Well, there was a movie and then there was also a miniseries on it, but they're both based on a BBC miniseries that's actually 7 parts instead of, you know, because British people have more patience because it's beaten into them. It's Traffic with a K, TRAFFIK. Highly recommended. It's slower, but it's really, really, really good. I highly recommend it. It's all on Netflix.
What would you say is the thesis? What's in it for fiends?
What's in it for fiends is just, it's a bunch of good movies, but it's also, first of all, there's no movie stars in it, which I like better than, you know, having to pay attention to, oh, that's Michael Douglas and having things attached to that.
Uh-huh.
But it just shows the lunacy of the drug war, of how it's unsolvable, unstoppable. And it was actually made before 9/11, and in it, an English member of parliament who's like their drug czar travels to Afghanistan and is talking to the Taliban. And they're basically like, you can't stop us here. We're going to grow poppies. Get the fuck out of here. And then he smokes opium with the member of parliament.
All right. So go check that out. Anything else?
I don't even know if it's the Taliban. I think it's the Muj.
Yeah, because I was thinking the Taliban was cracking down on opium growers.
Yeah.
Like there's a chart you can look up where it shows opium production under the Taliban.
Yeah.
And then opium production after the Americans got a hold of Afghanistan, and it just jumps up like exponentially. Yeah.
The Taliban were the morality police. The Taliban actually controlled Afghanistan, whereas Al-Qaeda was an underground group.
Right.
And is. And, you know, Ron Paul says that the Taliban doesn't want to destroy America on American ground, and the Al-Qaeda does. But if you read what the founder of the Taliban says, I think he does want to destroy America wherever he can. But he was an ex-Muj. The Muj didn't really turn into the Taliban, which we said before, which was incorrect. But the Taliban was...
The Muj turned into Al-Qaeda.
Right.
Not the Taliban.
But the Taliban was started by an ex-Muj also.
Ah, I see.
Yeah. Al-Qaeda was started by bin Laden.
But the name Al-Qaeda, I believe it means the database. And it was a lot of the original members of the Muj that got together. And so it wasn't necessarily this became that, but it was a lot of the same folks.
It means the base, which can either mean like army base or
something that starts from something.
I'm going to sign off. There's some big yellow government truck pulling up in front of my house.
Don't get droned.
I won't, but all right, man.
All right.
I'm going to sign off.
Peace. Worms.